All right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 32, which is also Episode 64 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and with me is someone that's also available in VR, Hugh.
Yes, and in soon to be in hologram form, too.
Like Tupac and the gang?
Like Tupac and all those guys, yeah. Yeah, it's a really horrible time when, like, we didn't plan to talk about this at all. But when, like, you're a celebrity and you're doing estate planning, you have to account for figuring out the legal construct it takes to not come back as a hologram later.
Yeah, yeah. That fad kind of came and went pretty quickly, though, it seems. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the... I don't watch a lot of Black Mirror, but have you seen the Black Mirror with Hannah Montana about that whole phenomenon?
I thought that was a great episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good one.
Pretty creative Nine Inch Nails covers.
Mm-hmm. It was good, yeah. I just one of two Nine Inch Nails Cyrus family crossovers in that year.
What was the other one?
The other one was that the country rap song.
Oh, really, yeah, we mentioned that last week, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Wow, that's funny.
Yeah, see, we all thought that was like the most bizarre year we could get, and
here we go.
Guess what?
What's been going on?
I've not been playing a ton, really, but just because I've been working a lot, so I have a lot of podcasts on in the background because I work in kind of a noisy office normally, so it's sort of weird to be like sitting in a silent office.
Yeah,
makes sense. So I've been catching up on the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast this week, and you know, we talk about like multi-platform games on here a lot. And he just covered two really good ones, Lock and Chase and Xevious. So if you don't listen to that podcast, you really should go check it out. I actually haven't played Xevious on the 2600, but based on the description, it sounds better than I thought it was. So yeah, fun show. And that's there's another thing, but I'll mention it when we get to Game Club.
Okay.
All right. What about you?
Yeah, same thing. Work frustrations, won't go into those, but never ending. But, finished Final Fantasy VII, remake. I don't know what I think about the game. I know the game is amazing in terms of it's beautiful, it plays well. It wasn't a game really made for me that I ended up enjoying, I think.
Okay.
But I also kind of don't care. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to play part two. I think it's also because it took me so long, and now I have this giant stack of games that I need to catch up on, that I probably will enjoy all of those games more than Final Fantasy VII. Not that I'm saying Final Fantasy VII is bad. I'm just saying it might not be good enough for the investment I put into it, you know?
Okay, I understand. Yeah. I mean, it's not a very long game. It sounds like you put more time into it than I did. Or maybe it just took you longer to get through.
It took me, I wasn't very good at it, at least. I think I played the first half wrong, and then I was under-leveled for a while.
Oh, okay. You could just put into easy mode, you know.
I don't do that. I usually never do that. What else? I tried playing Mario 35 last night for the first time, and I got a server maintenance window error.
Oh, nice.
So I said, cool, nice. Well, this is probably the only time I'm ever going to try to play this game, so there goes that. And then, I've just been playing the Game Club games. So not much new.
Yeah, welcome to the next generation where you get server errors trying to play Mario.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I have watched a few videos of it, and it does not seem like it's as good as Tetris 99, because Tetris 99, the game kind of ramps up quickly and keeps it at the same intensity. It's not very long. This, there could be three people left, and you could have that go on for 10 minutes. So I think they should make it ramp up faster at the end and so they don't, yeah, shorten up the game is what I'm saying. Yeah, I think we have a pretty balanced show here. We actually have more news I'm saving than what we have in the show, which is very unusual.
Yeah, I noticed that we do have a big backlog. So, well, sorry, we got some really interesting. We have more than enough to cover this episode. So
exactly, yeah. And the first one's a Kickstarter for, is it Jesse Jager or is it Jagger?
I'm gonna go Jager.
Okay, Jesse Jager in Cleopatra's Curse. So Zach gave us this news item, and it's a Kickstarter for a TurboGrafx game. I think it's also going to be on Genesis.
Yeah, it's multi-platform. It's on. It's weird. What I thought was kind of strange. It has a physical Sega Genesis release on cartridge, a TurboGrafx Hue card, a TurboGrafx Super CD version, but not a Sega CD version.
Hmm.
Since I've never looked at programming the Sega CD, I have no idea what the additional complexity is. I assume it's not zero extra complexity.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is like a little, exploration platformer game. Little bit reminiscent of Montezuma's Revenge, a little bit reminiscent of, I want to say Wonder Boy, but, you know, it's, you're going through levels and there's bosses and, you know, I don't want to call it a Metroidvania game because it looks, you know, the gameplay's fairly linear, so it doesn't look like Metroid. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, a platformer that's about, you know, exploring ruins. Sort of a platformer in like a Montezuma's Revenge type setting.
Yeah, yeah. The graphics look really good. I forget what the sound is like, but yeah, it seems like there's some pretty cool mechanics in this. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of different options on this this Kickstarter. So you can spend as low as 15 just to get a ROM release, up to, you know, what, 165 to get all versions physically, and then every iteration or permutation in between.
And they blew past their goal. There's still 6 days left as of recording this, so that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And what else? What do we got next here? Oh, two people were arrested for they were like a console hacking group that sold kind of, are they like EverDrive type carts, I think? I'm not familiar with Uber chips.
I thought they sold modded consoles. Right, I thought these guys were selling were consoles that were modded to then play ROMs. You know, all the sleazy stuff you see on Craigslist.
Okay, okay.
Because they mentioned the NES Classic in the article, and if you go on eBay, or again, Craigslist is more common for this because eBay, you can actually like report pirate stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would be like NES Classic with, you know, 8 billion games preloaded or whatever.
Okay, okay.
So that's what they were selling.
So I'm going to go ahead and say people don't do that. Please don't do that. Like, downloading a ROM is way different than selling a ROM.
Mm-hmm.
Way different. So please.
In the eyes of the law, they're not drastically different, other than they're not going to go after downloaders usually.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, people that share a torrent, maybe. People that sell it, definitely. But yeah, it was like a $2 million settlement and some people arrested. So pretty crazy. On Hackaday, you can 3D print this plaque that is on, what's this, on Nintendo's headquarters or something? Their playing card plaque?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the sign from their building 120 years ago, probably.
So you could put this on the front of your house, then.
Of course you could, yeah.
So
I will run that one by my wife and see what she thinks about putting this in.
Yeah, you can give it to her as a present.
I need to make a 3D printed plaque right now that says I already sent my ballot in by mail for my front door.
There's a upcoming documentary about Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, yeah, this looks pretty cool.
This looks, yeah, I will definitely be watching this. Oh, speaking of which, did you watch Console Wars yet?
No. I've watched nothing on TV. Wait, is that possible? No, I watched some of the NBA Finals.
It's exactly what you'd think it'd be. You know what I mean? It's exactly what you'd be expecting.
Yeah.
Which is not bad, but if you already know everything, it's just kind of, I don't know, not as interesting because you kind of know the entire story. But anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like maybe it's not interesting.
It's cool.
Because I know everything.
Yeah, just throw it on the background or something. But yeah, this I'm sure this Street Fighter 2 documentary will have a lot that I don't know, because I don't know the whole history of Street Fighter 2. What do we got? Prototype Game Boy Advance discovered thanks to Yahoo Auctions. Have you ever used Yahoo Auctions?
No, I had someone tell me. It wasn't someone telling me. It was some podcast that was telling me Yahoo Auctions is way better for importing Japanese games than eBay.
It's fantastic.
I don't know. I wasn't particularly impressed.
It might be what you're looking for and when you're looking for and stuff like that, but it just seems way better than eBay to me.
Okay.
I've only had, you know, I rarely import stuff, but I've had better luck on Yahoo Auctions.
Again, I suppose it completely depends what you're trying to import. I should maybe give it another go. But yeah, someone apparently put up a prototype. Did they know it was a prototype Game Boy when they put it up?
I don't know, but I don't think so. I really don't think so. But the short of this is it's almost exactly the same. The buttons are a little bit different. And I think this video links to, is that Hartford Games? It looks like their logo. Yep, it is. So yeah, friends of the show. So please watch the video.
For, if there's any YouTube channel that's going to be talking about a prototype Game Boy, that would be my first guess.
Yes. But yeah, it looks pretty much the same as the retail.
Ooh, so next up is some news that at least one listener will not want to hear. The original Myst is coming to VR. So it's a remake of Myst, but in virtual reality. So you
are
just
vomit-inducing. Walking.
I'm assuming it's a full environment you can walk around in, as opposed to just... It's just the still pictures, and you know, instead of using the mouse, you're touching them. Not interested. If it was you are actually walking around the environment, you know, the island, and it's a full environment, okay, it's kind of cool.
Well, also, it's for Oculus, which, as of a few weeks or a few months ago, forces you to have a Facebook account to use.
Oh, okay. Well, hard pass then.
Hard pass, yeah. So, but if any of our listeners play it, please let us know how it is, like, and what it's like. Did you know Mario might be someone that lives near you?
Yeah, I've met him personally many times.
Is he your plumber, or what else does Mario do? Construction
he's
worker?
He's my tennis referee.
Ah, okay. He's my golfing instructor.
Yeah.
So this is Nintendo Life, and yeah, just a very quick article about how Mario was designed to be kind of like someone that would live near you pretty much wherever you live. Like, he's not Japanese, he's not American, he's just kind of some dude. So, there you go.
Yeah, well, he was a generic everyman, right? I mean, that was
yeah.
always the vision for him.
Yeah. Who also dates princesses, though.
Is it established they're a couple? I thought he was just rescuing them.
I assume she's dating Bowser because she's with him more than Mario.
Yeah, I don't know what the canon is there.
You know, I think she's like too nice to turn Mario down. So she just keeps making excuses like, sorry, I've been abducted and I'm in another castle.
Okay.
And he just keeps following her around.
I'm sure there's some fan fiction that I don't want to read about this.
Well, don't they get... I think they do get married in Odyssey. That's not a spoiler, because I could be remembering that wrong.
Well, I know there's amiibos of them in wedding outfits.
Yeah.
So but that is might it their wedding or are they just attending some wedding?
I think it's theirs.
Okay.
And of course, Bowser's there too. So who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
Have you not played that yet?
No, my youngest kid has played it. I think she's close to like 100% completed it.
Yeah.
But I have not played it yet. I should just borrow it from her one day.
The whole retro sequence after at the end of New Donk City is worth the entire game. Like that 10 minutes is worth the whole thing to me. But more Nintendo news.
Yeah, feature on Nintendo Life about the Game Boy Micro. I own one of these.
Yeah, it's kind of a bittersweet write-up, right? Where they say it's kind of the best Game Boy, but it's also the least practical because it's so tiny.
No, it's kind of the most practical. It literally fits right in your front pocket. You can put, there's a like a carrying case for it that doesn't add much baggage to it. And I played it on an airplane. It was perfect for an airplane.
Yeah, I have the SP, which, mm-hmm. Gosh, I think I need to find a charger for it or something.
So since we're getting near the holiday season, do you want to hear my long story about buying the Game Boy Micro?
Yes.
So it was 2006. So my oldest kid was 3. And there was some, this is by the only time I've ever gone to Black Friday sales. There was some like Black Friday sale at Toys R Us, and something that I was supposed to get her for Christmas was on sale. And my wife said, well, just go to Toys R Us and, go get this thing. So I get in line at Toys R Us at like 4:30 in the morning. Again, this is to save like $11. Like, I don't know why I agreed to do this. But part of it is on that Black Friday sale, they had the Game Boy Micro for, I think it was $35.
Nice.
Because at that point, the DS was out mm-hmm. and the Game Boy stuff was being cleared out. So I said, okay, I will go. I sort of rationalized it by saying, I'm going to go get a Game Boy Micro for myself. But because it was 2006 or whatever, like there's a huge line and most of the people that were in line were there to buy the Wii because that was the year the Wii came out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or was this 2008? Uh-oh. No, it'd be 2005. 2006. Six. Let's get the years right. 2006. And you had to basically be in line and then they gave you a ticket to buy the Wii if you were standing in line. So like the first 20 people in line could get the Wii and everybody else couldn't.
Yeah,
which is fine. I wasn't there for the Wii, but I did get the Game Boy Micro for $35, and I got like Final Fantasy 11 or 12 for like $9.99. That was one of the other deals they had there.
Nice.
And then I got out of there, you know, about 5:30 or something, and my wife texts me and says, "Hey, since you're already out, can you go to Target? They open at 6 and get this other thing." And I'm like, "Fine." So I go over to Target, and this is when I decided I'm never doing Black Friday again. And I get in line at Target, and I'm behind these two women. I think it was like a mother-daughter. And I'm like, oh, I don't know why we do this. And they said, oh, well, we've been up since midnight because we went to the Coach store. Like the Coach store? And she said, yeah, they opened at midnight, but you could get a purse for like $200 off. I'm like, oh, okay, well. Or I could, you know, go to Chinatown and probably get one for even less.
Yeah.
You know, not to like reinforce, like, I mean, I'm just saying it's, you know, not a stereotype, it's a thing you can actually do.
Yeah.
And like, really? So so you went to the Coach store and then what time did you get in line here? And they're like, oh, just a couple of minutes ago. We were in line at the Coach store for 4 hours. Jeez. And then I thought, like, how much money would you have to pay me to stand in line for 4 hours? And that number is greater than $200.
Especially at a Coach store.
Mm-hmm. So I got whatever I was getting at Target and then I said never again. And hey, yeah. And then this whole coronavirus thing happened and definitely
you don't
won't
have
be
to worry about
this
it.
Year.
Yeah.
If anything good comes from this whole outbreak, it's the cancellation of everything that goes on the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, Game Boy Micro. I like it. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. It good article. Everyone should go in the show notes and read it. I've never seen this site before. CDM.link. Sounds pretty shady. But
it does sound shady. Yeah. What were
you but it's actually a nice looking site. And this is an article and demo of a chip synthesizer that exactly emulates the Super Famicom audio chipset as an instrument.
Okay.
So I guess that's a first. And yeah, sounds just like it. And there's some walkthroughs on it. And it talks about the architecture a bit and how they did this. And yeah, this looks like a really cool little virtual instrument. And it's not free. It's $40. But it looks like they put a lot of time into it. It works for Windows and Mac. You know, it's a VST plugin. And you could do a standalone application too. So pretty cool. This article makes me feel weird. The this next article, simply because of the GIF on it. You want to turn your Xbox One controller into a throttle stick?
No.
it's this.
Someone attached a big joystick to an Xbox 360 controller, or it's a regular Xbox controller. That's what this is about.
Yeah, and so now it's kind of a flight stick kind of thing, and it just looks weird. The way they're moving it just looks weird, but it's not as simple as it looks, you know, because there's some parts in it that have to move. There's like some joints in there that are moving around, so... Yeah, this probably wasn't that straightforward, but you could 3D print this at home if you want. So, yeah, there you go.
Do they still make the, what was it called? What was it? The joystick that was really popular back in the day for all the flight sims, Thrustmaster. That's it.
I don't remember that one.
That was the
I'm not going to Google Thrustmaster.
I sold 1,000 of these things. It was a giant, it was mostly people who played, you know, what is it called? Flight Simulator.
Yeah.
The name
yeah.
is so generic, I couldn't remember it.
And that's what this, they mentioned Flight Simulator in this article. So if you're into that, you might be into this. But ever since we did Flight Sim 4 on Game Club, I have not been.
Yeah. Let's see. So romhacking.net has a cool article they just put up about a collection. It's just about various games they have or various hacks they have that are for photosensitive individuals. So if you're prone to epileptic, if you're prone to epileptic, I can't pronounce that word. What's up with me? If you're prone to seizures from flashing lights, these are ROM hacks that reduce flashing in various games. Most of them NES games.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, this is a good cause. It really is. Like I'm sure there are people who really want to play Mega Man 2 and Zelda 2. I forgot about the Zelda 2, how much like flashing there is, like after you defeat a boss and that kind of stuff. Yeah, just good quality of life improvements for people here.
Yeah, this Elvira one looks cool too. Is this next one yours or mine? I don't remember this one at all.
I put this one on there, and it's okay. It's an article with virtually no content at all. It's just a link to a gallery of someone who modded a PC Engine controller. Basically, he modded a Game Boy Micro and a PC Engine controller, it looks like, to create a like a Turbo Express type of system here, where it's a PC Engine controller with a little screen built in playing PC Engine games.
Yeah, that is a tiny screen, isn't it?
it is. Yeah, I don't know if he used the Game Boy Micro hardware or if the Game Boy Micro is just there for comparison. It links to this guy's Twitter page, but the Twitter page is all in Japanese. So good luck with that one.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and give him a follow anyway.
I just thought it was a cool gallery.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was looking at that, and I was like, I don't understand what's happening here. This next one's mine from the AV Club. You can listen to Radiohead's Kid A or OK Computer in 8-bit. And I think OK Computer is one of the best albums ever. And I was never really a big fan of Kid A, but now I do like Kid A in 8-bit. And I was jamming this OK Computer 8-bit. I want to say port, but I guess it'd be cover. So loud that I had people walking by my house, like looking back, thinking what's going on there.
I've never really been a fan of theirs. Sorry.
You should check this out though, because it's crazy how good it is. And Zach actually mentioned to me that the same person did some Nine Inch Nails covers as well.
Okay. I might listen to that.
So really, really impressive stuff.
So this one I added, it's just announcement of the 26th annual interactive fiction competition. Oh. And if you want to, you know, play the games, judge them, whatever. It's just kind of got the rules and stuff. That's all.
Cool. Nice. I hope some of our listeners do that. Mm-hmm. I think this next one is yours as well.
Oh, and the last one here is a programming article that has nothing to do with retro gaming at all. I just thought it was funny. So it's about date parsing in Internet Explorer. So if you've ever done programming, you know, one of the classic problems you have to run into is you get a string that is a date, like January 1st, 2020, right? And you have to convert that to, you know, some sort of date object that you can work with in your code. Mm-hmm. And some languages are, like, better at this than others. Like, Java is terrible at it. Like, if I've written many methods just called, like, brute force date parser, where you're basically trying to work this thing out through, you're basically... The date formatting in Java, like, expects everything to be in a very specific format. Like, you define a specific format, and if the string varies at all in any way, like a period instead of a comma, it just blows up, right?
Yeah.
Whereas on the Windows side, it's always very, very generous parsing. I noticed this back when I was doing Visual Basic development, that you could pass any string into the Windows date parser, and it would give you something back.
Yeah.
And the author here, the guy who probably wrote it, put up a blog post called "How Did We End Up Parsing Savvy Day 29 Oatmeal 94 as Saturday 29 October 1994 and it explains how date parsing works in Windows.
Wow.
And it mentions if you pass the string Friday, that will return day 5, month 5, year 5, hour 5, or May 5th, 2005.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, something I really got, I didn't give much thought. That's cool. That's all our news. On our 64th episode, we didn't have any Nintendo 64 news.
Yeah, we did not plan ahead and think of doing like a Nintendo 64 tribute.
Jaguar or something, yeah.
Or yeah, Jaguar tribute would have been even better. although I don't know how long I can talk about like the two games on the Jaguar that I can stand playing.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true. The Doom port on Jaguar is pretty good. And the Wolfenstein port is pretty good. And of course, you know, Alien vs. Predator is fine. Mm-hmm. The real problem with the Jaguar is like a lot of the games are ports of Genesis games because at the end of the day, the Jaguar uses the same CPU as the Genesis.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ports. There's like, here's NBA Jam Tournament Edition. It looks a little bit better than the Genesis version, right?
Yeah.
there's just a lot of, like, not great stuff. A lot of, again, a lot of, like, 68,000 ports. I mean, you have Syndicate on there, right? And Cannon Fodder and stuff like that.
Was the Jaguar what Tempest 2000 was released on?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the first system it was on. I think there's a Saturn port. And there's weird stuff like a Nuon port of Tempest 2000. Do you know the Nuon?
No.
The Nuon was like a DVD player that also could play a small library of games.
Strange.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing one of the only reasons I still go to thrift stores is because I just expect to find one of those for $5 one day. Because I found my CDI just in a thrift store. Like, it was just in a stack of other CD players. because they didn't realize that was a Philips CDI. They just said, oh, it's yet another CD player. We have 1,000 of those.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, there's our Jaguar segment.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm looking over at my Jaguar collection right now to remember what I have. And most of them are not very memorable. I mean, I guess the Jaguar was famous for getting Rayman started. That was the first system
really?
With Rayman. That's...
I didn't know that. For some reason, I always thought that was PlayStation.
No, it was on Jaguar first.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it, like, I worked the Jaguar launch, but it was, like, the most anticlimactic launch of any game system because, like, there had been rumors for a while that Atari was going to launch this new system called the Jaguar, and we had a little bit of information on it, like, what were going to be some of the first games, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then just sort of, like, one day, we got a box, and the box happened to have, like, 2 Atari Jaguars in it and a couple of games. We're like, so I guess we have to set up a Jaguar section in the store now. Like, we didn't even have, like, if another system was launching, we would have ahead of time, like, had a section reserved for it and signs and, like, any kind of marketing at all. And yeah. We didn't. So we're just like, well, I don't know. We'll find a spot. We put up the Jaguar. Probably, I think it was next to 3DO stuff, because why not put all the next alleged next-gen systems together? And I had 1 or 2 people who bought everything bought it. That was about it. I mean, it didn't really... Most people just sort of laughed at the idea of Atari having another system, because at that point, the Atari name was pretty much in the gutter. You know, they hadn't really produced a game system that made an impact in over 10 years.
I didn't know one person that bought the Jaguar.
Yeah, I bought it when we cleared it out for $50. That's when I bought mine.
Yeah.
And I played, you know, a lot of Tempest 2000 on it. I played some Alien vs. Predator. Obviously Wolfenstein, because I just mentioned that. And not a lot on there. There's an off-road game, like Super Off-Road Rally. It's a name similar to that. That's kind of fun, but it just kind of looks like a 16-bit game. There's never really been anything on the Jaguar that I was like, woohoo, this is the future of gaming. It's all kind of stuff that's like a little bit better than the Genesis version of the same game.
Well, is it though? Because you have to use that controller.
No, there really weren't third-party controllers. I don't recall any third-party controllers ever being made for it. Some may have been by now, but...
But that's what I mean. Like, the Genesis port would actually be better because you could just use the Genesis controller.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the controller wasn't really as bad as people think.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't great. I mean, it was definitely inferior to the Genesis or Super Nintendo default controller.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think it was better than the default Saturn controller.
Yeah, pretty much anything is.
Right. It was definitely better than that. So I didn't think it was terrible. And then, you know, I had this promo tape. So we talked about the Hard 4 Games YouTube channel before, right? So they have a rip of this Atari Jaguar promo tape that we got in 1994. And we played it a lot because it was like an hour long. And if you had a VCR running, you know, your promo videos in the store, long tapes were better because you didn't have to change the tape. And I'm sure you can imagine that listening to the same like 7-minute tape over and over again slowly drives you insane.
Yep.
So this was good. It was like an hour long and it was pretty quiet. There actually wasn't really much dialogue in it. But man, did that thing not make the Jaguar look good.
Hmm.
I mean, there is no promo tape that I think has... Like, the promo tape is supposed to get people to be interested in the system, and this had the exact opposite effect.
Yeah, even the Virtua Boy promo tape made it look kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, we probably sold more Virtua Boys than Jaguars at the store.
I believe it. Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, I'm pretty positive we did. I mean, the Jaguar was, again, it was kind of a very small cult following, and it was people who were just, again, it was the same people that would have bought the 3DO. It was the people who just buy every system. You know, I don't know if they won the lottery, if they just live in their mom's basement. I know it wasn't that, because I can still remember, like, a couple of these customers, and they weren't, like, mom's basement age, you know what I mean? Like, they were, I don't know, like project manager somewhere. I don't know. For whatever reason, they bought every game system. They had a decent income and just liked video games. Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't buy every game system. I don't, I'm not going to buy like the whatever Xbox X1 X or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And if I, you know, in the 90s, I certainly wasn't buying every system because I didn't have enough money.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the Jaguars, it's quite an interesting anomaly. And then the Jaguar CD, I don't know if we ever sold any of those. We maybe only ever had one in stock.
I forgot that even existed. Jeez.
Yeah, and that was, again, mostly ports of stuff you could get elsewhere. There wasn't much new content. I mean, it's like, hey, look, we got this cutting-edge new CD system. You can play Dragon Slayer on it. And it's like, I can play Dragon Slayer on every other system ever made. Like, yeah, there was already Sega CD, 3DO, PC, Game Boy Color might have even had one at that point. No, Game Boy Color did not have one at that point. It was just like, okay, great. You have Dragon Slayer. Congratulations. And I don't remember there being too much in the way of original games that you'd want to get that thing for. It's a cool collector's item now, right? It's like the rarest, maybe not the rare, it's one of the rarer CD systems of that era.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I forgot it existed.
Yeah. Well, again, there's not much on it, man. List of... Well, I'm going to look this up real quick. Jag... Not Jag episodes. What is Jag? Is that a TV show?
Yeah, a 90s... what are they, Air Force or something?
All right. Now I'm really curious about the Jaguar CD games here. Category... Baldies, never, don't remember that at all. That might have been a post-release. Battle Morph.
Okay.
Also, I think that was the pack-in game for the system. Let's see. Brain Dead 13, which is a Dragon Slayer kind of clone that was on everything already. Dragon Slayer, which I mentioned already. Iron Soldier 2, that was a post-release, too. That was after the system was dead. Myst, everybody's favorite game. Space Ace, Primal Rage. So what do you think?
Not outstanding. Primal Rage. That game, man, is just not great.
No, and I think it did not have a cart version. I thought maybe it was already a cart release on the Jaguar. But it was not.
No, that ended up coming out in 32X, though, right?
It was on 32X, yeah. I have it on 32X.
Okay.
I don't know why I have it on 32X, but I do.
Yeah.
I also had a sealed copy that I sold on eBay for like $100.
That's weird. The sealed one, or the sealed one, the second one is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wish there'd be some way you could get a real release here. So, yeah, first, like, the games that came when this thing launched, we had, like, Cybermorph and Trevor McFur in the Crescent Galaxy. I assume you're not familiar with those.
Okay. No.
And then later on, like a couple months later, we got like Dino Dudes, which is kind of a Lemmings game, and Raiden, or Raiden, depending on how you prefer to pronounce it.
Okay.
And then kind of nothing for a while. And then in 1994, a few more games came out, like Tempest 2000, Wolfenstein 3D, like kind of summer, fall 94 is when games started really coming out for the system. Which again is like a year after it launched. So it's already like, this is bad times for the system. You know, it's been sitting on the shelf for a year and has had like four games.
But, I mean, who even owned Atari at that point?
So Atari was still, it was before they were bought by JTS. So this was probably still Tramiel family.
Oh, yeah, they did buy it after Warner. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so this was, so it was still owned by the Tramiel family at this point, and it wasn't until... So at this point, like, I think Jack Tramiel had left the company, and his son was running it, and then his son had, like, a heart attack or something, and that ultimately led to them selling the company to JTS Corporation, who was, like, I don't know, they made hard drives or something. But that was the end of the Jaguar, because I think JTS was just... interested in like the IP or something. They weren't interested in selling the Jaguar system. They probably either wanted the patents or the IP.
And now you could buy the Atari Bitcoin, whatever it's called. The Atari coin.
Yeah, that doesn't sound scammy at all.
No, and you could go to their casino hotels.
Yeah. It's a shame someone better couldn't have bought the Atari IP earlier on. You know, when the Trujillo family wanted to unload whatever assets Atari had, if like Sega had stepped in and bought it, or I mean, Nintendo's Sony probably not interested. Someone. Nintendo kind of used them as like competition they already defeated, right?
Yeah.
But anyone competent, and maybe you'd have some better Atari branded things today. But yeah, so like 94, there was really like I would say like late summer through winter 94, there was a pretty solid flood of games. Awful lot of games came out. And then, you know, early 95, more and more games came out, but the quality of games really started to drop. Like, kind of peak Jaguar was sort of maybe like October, November 94, because that's when you had like Doom and Alien versus Predator and that kind of stuff. And then a lot of just garbage. Like, I think the people, I don't know where like Atari found people to develop for the Jaguar, but they did not get the A-Team. The only thing that was maybe like A-Team around that time was Rayman. So Rayman was like summer or fall 95.
Yeah, and that guy that created Rayman retired this week.
Yeah.
He's done with video games.
But, you know, once the Saturn in PlayStation came out, this system was gone. It was just, no one was interested in it anymore. So I think the last licensed release was Fight for Life, which is the worst fighting game you will play in your entire life. Have you played Fight for Life?
No, you told me about it before, though. I watched a video of it before.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable, man. I mean, it's just, it's Virtual Fighter, but much slower with worse controls, and like the life meters on this thing, man. Like, I probably brought this up when you talked about it before, but like how many like full unblocked roundhouse kicks to the head do you think you could survive?
Two?
Yeah.
One?
Right. But I mean, you're up to 40 or 50 in this game before the round is over.
Yeah, does not look great. Yeah, I'm looking at some of these games. Atari Kart looks pretty interesting. I never heard of that one.
Yeah, I think that's one of the rarest games for the system.
Yeah, it does not look as good as the original Mario Kart. But yeah, there's our accidental Jaguar rambling section topic.
Yeah, the Jaguar. Yeah.
Do the math.
Maybe I will hook mine up today. Oh, mine's hooked up, I should say. It's always hooked up. I actually have to keep it on a shelf. So there's no dust cover for the cartridge slot on the Jaguar because Atari.
Oh, yeah.
And so I actually have it on like a shelf where it's like a solid shelf over it so dust can't fall into the Jaguar.
Good idea. Yeah.
I have to implement my own anti-dust system for the Jaguar because, man, Atari just couldn't do anything right in that era. You know, it just, if there's ever seen a company where just everything you do is wrong, it was Atari.
Yeah,
in the
they're kind of the thesis about that. Well, and the 2020s, 2019s. I guess we should go on to Game Club, huh?
Yeah.
At least we won't forget this time. So I picked one of my games I've been saving, and I wanted to save it for a spooky time, like October. And that is Nightmare in the Dark on the Neo Geo. And this is a Bubble Bobble-like game where you play a gravedigger who lives in a cemetery who kind of, it's weird that they call him a gravedigger, but because he kind of guards the cemetery, which is kind of the opposite of a gravedigger. Well, I guess maybe he digs the original graves. He doesn't re-dig up. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, you're protecting the cemetery from zombies and monsters and stuff. I guess part of the story is you don't want the villagers to know about it. Like, you just want them to live their happy lives. And so this is a fantastic game in my book. It plays well. The sound is fantastic. The backgrounds, the artwork is just fantastic. It's almost like early 90s Sierra Online-esque. You know, almost looks like paintings. And you could beat this game in about 25, 30 minutes. And the gameplay, like I said, is Bobble Bobble-like, but it's single screen platforming. And you play the Gravedigger, and you have this lantern that you throw fire at, you know, zombies and ghosts and whatnot. Eventually, if you hit one of them enough, they turn into a fireball, which you can kind of wield, and then you can almost like bullet over other enemies and taking them out, kind of like in Bubble Bobble when you go really fast somehow and you could take out a lot of the enemies.
Okay.
This also has giant boss levels. This isn't a very hard game, I think it's a really gratifying game. I play this game over and over. I don't get sick of it. It came out in 2000, where the Neo Geo hardware stopped in, you know, 97. Yeah. So it's a fairly late game. You know, Neo Geo software kept coming out till 2004. I don't think this came out on the home system. I think it was only an MVS cart for the arcade. Oh, no, it's on both. And I guess it's also on Neo Geo CD. Okay. I just learned that while recording right now. So what did you think of this one? Did you watch a video or you download a...
Yeah, I did watch a video. It turns out I don't actually have a ROM of this game. And it's not on any of the Neo Geo collections that I own.
Yeah, it's kind of a rare one. That's for sure.
I probably should have like made some effort to find a copy of this game. Looks kind of fun. Yeah. I mean, it's not something I think I would normally, it's not something I would have sought, you know, kind of sought out to play on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So kind of a neat, I don't know, looks neat, but I guess I should just, get around to playing it, huh? Cause it is Halloween themed.
I do think you would like it in the boss battles. Those bosses are huge. And again, you know, they drop little enemies that, again, you have to throw your fire at, and then you bowl the fireball at the boss. But I forgot to mention there are power-ups in this game as well. So you can make your fire stronger, you can make your fire throw longer, you know, you get some of your energy back and, you know, an extra life, that kind of thing. Highly recommend. I hope some of our listeners play this and write us about it.
Yeah.
And let's dive into your game.
So I did U.S. Super Mario Brothers 2, or as I call it, the real Super Mario Brothers 2, which I played through on the Switch this week. I did an all Luigi run because the game is completely broken with Luigi. I don't know how much of Super Mario Brothers 2 you've played, but an awful lot of the levels. So basically, you know, it's Super Mario Brothers, except with different mechanics, because it was originally a different game. Like, we all know that. Like, it was a different Shigeru Miyamoto game that got rebranded in the U.S. as Super Mario Brothers 2. And it's got, you know, Mario, Luigi, Toad, and Princess, and they have different attributes in terms of, like, strength and speed and jumping ability. But Luigi is always my favorite because, like, his jumping ability is crazy, and he can bypass huge chunks of levels. Just because there's, like, spots where I don't think the developers thought anyone would try jumping, where Luigi can clearly jump over and get to like parts of the level that like get to parts of levels way earlier than you're supposed to.
Yeah.
The downside is Luigi's kind of bad in boss fights. He's probably the worst character to have in boss fights.
I think that's debatable. I mean, his jump is slower, so it makes it a little bit harder, but like when you're fighting Wart, you can actually with Luigi grab the vegetable and then jump behind Wart and just roll from back there.
Yeah, I've never actually tried that approach. So on Switch, it's the Super Mario All-Stars version, which fixes a lot of bugs.
Mm-hmm. It plays a little bit different.
Yeah, it plays a little different. You know, the original game was kind of glitchy. There were a lot of strange ways you could break the game or clip through things or just a lot of oddities. You get like objects stuck in your head. I don't know if you ever did that while playing.
No, I've never done that.
Yeah, like if you were pulling some, like with the door, you know, there's the dark world where you get the potion and you go behind the door. And then when you're pulling up coins, if you pull up coins, if basically you're pulling up a coin at the same time, the level's changing. Sometimes you'll like pull up a vegetable and it'll be wedged in your head.
For like the rest of the level?
Until you change screens and then you're holding the vegetable.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really messed up. There's just a lot of like really weird broken stuff in the game like that. And yeah, they fixed a ton of it in Mario All-Stars. And I see you put a link here to a Kotaku article that agrees with my theory that America got the better Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah, it just randomly got posted yesterday, I think, this article. So instead of putting it in part of the news, I just put it in the game club area. Yeah, I've played a lot of this game. And just randomly, lately, I've been watching a lot of speedrunning of this.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And you could do some crazy level jumps in this.
Yeah, the speedrunners tend to use Toad a lot because there's a glitch where Toad runs faster while he's carrying an object.
Also on the flying carpet too.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's even without Luigi, you can trick it to make you jump where you skip most of the level. Like you go backwards and jump over the wall and you're at the last boss fight of the level you're on. A lot of stuff like that. I've learned a lot about this game over the past few weeks. I would say this is... I like this game as much as I like Super Mario Brothers 3.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's not a popular opinion, but maybe it's nostalgia, but I just love this game.
Yeah, I tend to go back and play this game a lot more than Super Mario 3.
Me too, yeah.
Like, I don't... I probably play through this game once a year. I don't play through Super Mario 3 once a year.
Now, do you ever go back and play Doki Doki Panic?
I don't know if I've ever played it. I think I fired it up once and said, oh yeah, that's the same game. And then that was it.
So the major difference, other than, you know, the character swaps, is that to beat the game, you have to bring all four players to the end. So there's a little map of, so if you beat it with Toad, then you have to beat it, or whoever, you know, their analogs are in the game. Then you got to go beat it with the other guy.
That sounds really annoying.
I thought I beat it, and then they're like, cool, bring the rest of the people over. I'm like, no, that's enough. So they made some good quality of life updates for Super Mario Brothers 2.
All right, so you want to talk about what games we're going to do next episode?
Yeah, I'm going to keep it spooky and go Splatterhouse 2 on the Genesis. One that I've always played Splatterhouse on TurboGrafx, and I thought it was weird that it ever jumped over to Sega. So I just never gave those a chance. So here we go.
So this is a exclusive to the Genesis, but I believe is on... Well, it was on the Virtual Console. I don't know if it's on any of the collections.
Yeah, let me look.
It's not on the, is it on the Genesis MIDI? Or is that Splatterhouse 3 that's on the Genesis Mini? I will say I'm glad you picked this instead of Splatterhouse 3, because Splatterhouse 2 is a lot better than Splatterhouse 3.
Good, yeah. I did not play that. But this is not on the Sega Classics that's on the Switch.
Okay. All right, and I'm going to go with the Seventh Guest. So just kind of two quick notes. I've played the sequel to the Seventh Guest, but not the original. I don't know why I played the sequel, but not the original. Who knows? And before I picked it, I wanted to make sure I could actually run this game. So I wasted a bunch of time trying to get this game to run in a virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
I have two copies of the Seventh Guest. I don't know why, because I'm a crazy person. And I tried ripping both of the CDs, but they have like this copy protection thing where there's like huge blocks of bad sectors. It's on both discs. They do this. And if you actually flip the disc over, you can kind of see like the disc has like parts that are written and then parts that are blank and then another part that's written to. So It's some copy protection thing where it just, you can rip it. It just takes forever because you're going through a bunch of errors. And so I got the discs ripped and tried to install it in Windows 95 and all this other stuff. And then I remembered, oh, wait, I bought this on Steam like years ago. It was some, you know, yeah, bundle, horror game bundle. And I bought it for a nickel or something. Maybe not literally a nickel. You get my point. And sure enough, I have it on Steam and it runs just fine in Steam.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I'll definitely... I haven't played this game since I think I was on 486 or whatever was out back then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on... There's a mobile phone version also.
Really? Okay, maybe that's the one I'll check out.
Yeah, I think it's only like $4.99 too. All right, and if you want to write in about these games or any previous ones or anything else, it is email at retrogameclub.net.
Yes, we love when people email us. It's why we're here, to talk to people about video games. And Zach actually emailed us, which is rare. Well, he emails us all the time, but not for this kind of stuff. But he says his scariest retro game moment was Resident Evil 4. The regenerators make a terrifying sound that you usually hear before seeing them, and it really builds up the tension. And he wonders what some of our scariest memories are in video games. Yeah.
So I wrote mine down because I wanted to remember them. I still, for whatever reason, find the game Rygar on NES terrifying. I cannot articulate why I find that game terrifying. It just really creeps me out. But like in general, I always find like low-tech games more scary than high-tech ones. I don't know why. Like, I've never played a Resident Evil or Manhunt or whatever game where I was like spooked at any moment. But like, if I'm playing an old Intellivision game like Treasure of Tarman or Cloudy Mountain, right? An enemy, just like a really strong enemy popping up out of nowhere, is way more startling in those games than anything in Resident Evil to me. Have you played Cloudy Mountain ever?
No.
Okay.
You said that's Intellivision?
Yeah. It was just called Dungeons and Dragons on the Intellivision, but then on all the later releases, they either call it Cloudy Mountain or Crown of Kings.
Okay. Copyright issues.
Copyright, because they can't call it Dungeons and Dragons anymore. And yeah, I mean, they are like enemies, like, you know, a strong enemy will just kind of pop up out of nowhere. Because the way the passages draw, it's like you're in a dark room and the passages only kind of illuminate, if you will, as you enter them. And you will get enemies that absolutely jump out of you out of nowhere. And because there's like zero frames of animation involved, it seems like it's just nothing and then enemy. It's really more surprising than... I don't know, when I'm in a realistic horror environment, I'm sort of expecting something to come out at any moment.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I didn't write anything down because kind of the same thing, like, video games rarely scare me. The only thing I could think of is when I tried PlayStation's VR, there's like a horror game for it. And I was like, I don't like this at all. This is, I don't want to be here. Get me out of here. You know, where it's like, there's only so much you could do in VR. So I think you're in, if I remember right, you're in like a mine cart. So that's what makes you move, and you're like going through this cave and there's like, you know, zombies and whatnot. And I don't want that. Get out of here with that. So, yeah, that's all I could think of. Adam writes in, he decided to play Super Mario Brothers 2, on the All-Stars Wii compilation disc. And, he either is not very good at it or the lag from the Wii makes it, not very playable. After playing 30 minutes, he really decided to turn it off. He tried all the different characters and he felt the vines felt slippery, and he just didn't like the mechanics of it all. Overall, he's just not a fan of this game. And so I do think that's the unpopular opinion, I think. I definitely know what he means about the vines feeling slippery, where you're climbing up and then all of a sudden you're falling off the side.
Yeah. I mean, there's kind of no penalty for falling in this game. There are not a lot of spots where you fall to your death. There are some, but it's not like the original Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, hey, everyone has their opinion, so I could...
Yes,
yeah,
you're not legally required to enjoy Super Mario Brothers 2.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's see. Majors writes in, says when he heard about the Nerd Noise radio episode that I talked about last week, that it was going to be, you know, a dark and depressing episode because it's about pandemic music, and was very, very happy to find that it was not. That it was actually about games we played during the pandemic. Maybe I should have made that more clear. It's not about pandemic-themed games. It's about games we played while we had nothing else to do for a few months. And I guess we still don't. I could probably do that episode again in 6 more months, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Let's see. Useless projects. Yeah. He mentions that we call a lot of our projects useless, but he thinks that they're still worth talking about and the kind of thing we need to maybe cheer people up nowadays. And it's true. I actually like useless projects. Nearly every project I work on is useless. So.
Me too. Including at work.
Yeah, anyone at work listening, of course, not those projects. I'm talking about other projects. I don't think any of my coworkers listen to this show. That'd be my... I don't know. I bet that I do have people who are technically coworkers that listen. We got enough employees. It would almost be statistically impossible for that not to be the case. All right.
I have to cut in here. I'm sorry. So I sit right next to a window while I'm recording.
Okay.
And there's a sidewalk right outside that window. And a guy just walked by with black pants on. And the entire butt part of his pants is ripped off. I don't know what happened to this guy, but that's what just happened in my life.
Was he?
He has like white boxers underneath it.
Was he attacked by some kind of animal?
It looks like a coyote or something got him. He's just walking a normal pace, though, with like a grocery bag. So who knows what was going on there. But just so all the listeners know, it's just if I sound, I didn't want to sound distracted. And
he doesn't have a Hawaiian shirt on or something, right?
No, okay. No.
All right. You're probably safe then. I have blackout curtains because I'm in my game room here. So I having worked at a video game store, I know what sunlight will do to video game boxes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, full blackout curtains in here. It's great. I'd blackout curtain everything if I could get away with it.
Same, yes.
Matter of fact, let's just get rid of the windows. What up cabinet not being for you, Rob? This is at you specifically. And it sounds like what a real arcade cab owner would say, which is true. MSX yes. Mario World looking better than 8-bit. And he says, you know, that's because of the MSX GPU. So the MSX does run on a Z80, but it has a separate graphics processor. Sort of like the TurboGrafx 16, right? So this TurboGrafx 16 is a 6502. It's actually an 8-bit. It's not literally a 6502. It's a 6502 variant. And has a 16-bit video chip, which is how it's actually branded as a 16-bit system. Same kind of like math Atari used to call the Jaguar 64-bit system, even though it runs a Motorola 68000. Mm-hmm. Setting up emulation taking more time than playing. Yes, so that's something he said he can relate to for sure. He said he recently got into some retro-style Steam games and spent a good hour just trying to get his Saturn pad to work with them. And finally, after figuring it out and manually updating the config files... all right. And along the same idea, mentioned being overwhelmed with the list of ROMs. And that's also something he can relate to. And it's kind of nice when we just offer up a few games each episode to help you focus on one or two instead of going through pages of games. I guess we could do that. We could recommend like 50 games each episode.
That would be a fun podcast where we just say the names of video games. That's
the whole show. Yeah. that was basically our Jaguar segment. All right. Nightmare in the Dark says he enjoyed this game on emulation, really liked the music, and completely agrees that it is a Bubble Bobble type game. And what's this Twitter post? From MSX2? Is this a separate email or is this the same email? It's the same email.
It's the same email.
We posted about on Twitter? Wait, we have Twitter?
Zach. Yeah, yeah, Zach.
I'm joking, of course. I know we have a Twitter account. And what is the Twitter account, by the way, if you really want to follow it?
Oh, at RGC Podcast.
Yeah. So out there, we put a comment about the MSX 2 homebrew of Mario World. And he also replied that it does look very nice, but he hasn't had any luck getting it to run with the sound or joypad support. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Majors, for that email. And we had another email here, which I want to point out that if you don't want your name read, we can still read your email and just say a listener wrote us. So
yes,
I don't want people not to write us because of a privacy thing.
Yes,
we will totally make it anonymous. And this person wrote in.
Yes, I'll just say their name does maybe rhyme with Robama.
Yeah. Wozniak.
I'm
yeah.
Joking.
How Wozniak did his last name backwards or something in Nintendo Power. Anyway, so this is an anonymous email, but also it read a little bit weird where I wasn't sure if he actually wanted us to read the email on the air. So I'm just going to do a very vague summary. Kind of a mix of not reading it and reading it, which
way too much intro.
How's that different? How's that different than what I do normally? Okay. But he just says a lot of very nice things about the show and asks if we have a Patreon or any way he could give back to us, which is a very nice thing to ask. I really heartfelt appreciate that. But I think this is just a hobby, and it cost me $17 a month to host, and then, other than playing the games, about 3 hours of work a week. And it's something I enjoy doing. So I'm you guys listening and writing in is more than enough payment. But thank you for asking about that.
Yeah. And I personally would not want to do a Patreon because it becomes a chore after a while, to be kind of blunt. You end up, because once people are actually giving you money, you actually like have to do stuff on some interval for them. unless it's a ridiculous amount of money, I'm not really interested in doing that. Like, yeah, I already have a job, yeah, right? I already have a place that expects me to do things on a certain interval in exchange for money.
And like a lot of dudes have a hobby like playing golf that costs them more than what I pay for this podcast. And this podcast is my hobby, you know? I think of it like that, but
right.
He also does say that he really enjoys the deep dive episodes recommends possibly doing more, and that he likes that we just go into the differences between systems, hardware, and emulation and stuff like that in a really straightforward manner. So thank you very much for that email. And again, like, if anyone wants to write an email and have it be anonymous, absolutely, that is no problem at all. And also, if you want to write us, just to write us and not have it read on the air, that's welcome as well too. We won't even mention that you wrote us, you know. It could be a dialogue between us. Mm-hmm. So if anyone would like to do that, again, that's email at retrogameclub.net. that's facebook.retrogameclub for Facebook, and at RGC Podcast. And Zach put on this question on social media. What's your scariest retro game moment?
I'll take a couple of these. How about one that I think is a very common answer, which is the dogs in Resident Evil 1. Splatterhouse, where the rooms come alive. And he was only 7 when that happened.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. And definitely one I think we can all relate to. Realizing I had accidentally written over my Final Fantasy VII save data. Yep.
Yeah, that is terrifying. We had some 3DS feedback. Someone says that the new 3DS XL was the apex and the DS's evolution. I can't agree more. And I'm gonna bounce down to not the next one. Just because someone else writes in saying he was a fan of the new 3DS XL. He really he enjoyed the 3D, but usually had it off. And that's what I do as well.
At least one other who is a big fan of 3D Outrun, Shantae, and Blaster Master Zero.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Tetris Axis, I haven't played that one. Have you played that?
I have not. I did, speaking of Shantae, I did get the new Shantae game on Switch from Looted Root Games this week. So
nice.
I will probably start that this week. Those games are really fun.
And someone writing in about the dual analog option for GoldenEye, that he never did that on GoldenEye, but on Perfect Dark. And Perfect Dark would be a good Game Club game.
Yeah, I could maybe finally open my sealed copy of it.
And it's funny. Would you open it up for Game Club?
Yeah, why not? It's like, I know, like, people must think that's insane that I own like a sealed copy of Perfect Dark and I would consider opening it at this point. I don't really feel like eBaying it. I bought it on clearance. Like, I went to a Toys R Us one day. This is a lot of Toys R Us in this episode. They're out of business, so obviously they're not a sponsor. Yeah, there was just like Nintendo 64 games, $9.99 or whatever, right? This was probably after the GameCube was out. So I got like Perfect Dark and a bunch of other stuff. I don't know. I probably have 10 games from that trip. Most of them still sealed. Nice. Just from the Toys R Us funny. Nintendo 64 clearance bin.
Oh, I miss Toys R Us.
Yeah, I do too, man. I went pretty often. You know, obviously I braved the Black Friday once. But I mean, again, that was, you know, 2006 and I was a fairly new parent. And I guess it seemed like the thing to do. But even with my kids older, I would still go there. I mean, you know, because they had really good video game deals. You know, like when Toys R Us, Mark, the thing with Toys R Us is like they would clear stuff out really cheap. Like for new games, they're the same price as going to GameStop or anywhere else. Like there's no real advantage to Toys R Us over anyone else. But yeah, when they cleared stuff out, they really cleared it out.
They had a giant TurboGrafx section too, compared to other stores.
Yeah.
That was a big deal to me.
Well, they had every, I mean, even in like the, you know, their sort of dying days. I mean, they had Vita games, which you didn't find in most other stores. You know, they had PSP. They always had, of course, huge, you know, Wii U, PlayStation sections, right? I mean, I built up a pretty big Wii U backlog if they're going on a business sale.
I feel like our listeners should write in and tell us if they would like a Toys R Us episode. I feel like we could pull that off.
We probably could, yeah, yeah.
Or even a Toys R Us catalog episode, because their Christmas catalogs are pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, that's when I've never spent time scanning. I've never gotten into doing posting Toys R Us catalogs. I've done a couple few other stores, but never Toys R Us. But yeah, what a great store. I realize our Canadian listeners right now are like, "What are you talking about? There's a Toys R Us open right next to me." But for everyone else,
oh, they're still
Canada,
open there.
This is a chain that no longer exists.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Toys R Us Canada was a separate legal corporation. And from what I understand, is still largely in business today and looks exactly like what you would expect it to.
I might have to make a pilgrimage. Well, all right. That was we had a lot of random topics on this episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. This is what happens. We kind of both are working a lot and don't talk about what we want to talk about ahead of time.
Don't prepare at all. That's another reason why we don't do Patreon. We prepare very little.
Very, 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 very little. Yeah, I just don't want to have expectations. I've reached this point in life where I don't want any expectations.
Well, it's funny. The East episode's the one we probably prepared the most for.
Uh-huh.
And it has our most listeners and probably our most unsolicited kind feedback.
Okay.
So maybe that says something.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about doing another series deep dive. And the challenge is, like, you and I play different types of games. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to find, like, a series that we've both played a lot of. Or that one has played a lot of and the other has played enough of that they can keep up. But we're close. One series in mind that we'll do before the end of the year. You know, if we end up doing, like, a winter vacation like we did last year for, you know, a couple weeks, maybe we'll record this like an episode to release, you know, around New Year's or something when we're otherwise not recording.
Yeah, I like that idea. You just have a little bit of homework to do for that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll do the notes. You do some gameplay.
Without getting into what it is, I've been trying to set up to play some of the games in the series that I skipped.
Nice. Cool. Well, if our listeners actually made it this far into the episode, I think that wraps it up.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.
Thank you.